Thanks for tuning in to WNCW. I'm Joe Kendrick. Very happy to be on the phone today with Danny Barnes. He's playing in the region this Saturday in Arden at Moonlight Mile Studio in support of his new record, Shree 108. Welcome, Danny.
Hey, Joe. How you doing, man? Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's great to talk to you, and I've really enjoyed getting to listen to your new record and kind of digging into your blog, DannyBarnes.com.
You're the one that looked.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure I'm not alone. So tell us about making Shree 108.
Well, you know, I have this aesthetic called Barnyard Electronics, and I've been working on it for, I don't know, maybe like, well, I guess since about 2000 or so in various forms, but I'm trying to be like a one-man wing of like acoustic music or Americana music or jam band music or whatever you call it, or bluegrass acoustic music that's kind of sort of art-centered, I guess. And so what I've worked on with this aesthetic is a combination of like older American forms of music combined with electronic, contemporary electronic editing techniques and processing techniques, and poetry and architecture that are contemporaneous. So that's kind of what I've been working on. And so that kind of represents, it's like a postcard from my recent lab work and studies I've been doing. So those are the songs that I have recently put into a solid form for folks to hear and things. And so that sort of represents my latest work. I perform the music live with a computer program that I built in an audio program called MaxMSP, which is like a visual audio programming language. It's a sound manipulation tool. So I process the banjo and sing my songs with that. And that's the aesthetic that I'm working on in the last, I don't know, 15 years, 14 years. I call it Barnyard Electronics.
So this is on your own label, Minnerbucket, and you've played with a number of people, either, you know, on your own records or guesting with other folks. Are you planning on making this as sort of an extended run of solo records?
Yeah, that's what, you know, that's kind of really where my heart's at, you know. That's what I like doing. I mean, I go play with my friends and stuff. I just made a record with Robert Keane in November. He's working on coming out with a new acoustic record, so I went down there and recorded with him. And then I just finished making a record with Jeff Austin from Yonder Mountain String Band. I was in Boulder last week making a record with him. So, and I like working with my friends and things like that, but what I feel like is like kind of like my reason for being here on the earth at this time is to sort of develop my own aesthetic of music, which is this thing that I've been working on. And your listeners can just go to my site and hear the whole record for free. You can stream it for free right on my site. It's called Shree 108, and you can just play it all you want. And then you can pass the link around to your friends if you want, and you can download it in various formats. There's all different kinds of formats that are represented there. If you want lossless files, or if you really have just the MP3s or whatever, you can get whatever kind of file you want. And but yeah, that's kind of, for me, it's super creative to work by myself with electronics, because what I've come to realize about myself just through figuring out who I am and what I'm trying to do is, I'm an idea person. I make up ideas. I make up contexts and make up configurations of music and structures and things like that. That's what I do, is I make them up, you know. I'm not the kind of person that learns to play an instrument within a style and puts together a band within a style and puts out records that are in a style and all that, you know. I'm more of a person that sort of makes my own style or whatever. And so that's kind of what I'm working on. And it, as a creative person, what it allows me to do is to instantly make ideas. It's tougher with a band. You know, as an idea person, when you're trying to do, you know, different things with your music, it's kind of tricky with a band, because you have to kind of get them all on board with what you're seeing and what you're feeling. And sometimes you can and sometimes you can't. Sometimes they don't understand or like what you're suggesting, or they have other ideas or whatever. And for me, I just feel like it's the most direct way to get my ideas out. And I have a lot of ideas. I'm constantly working on stuff. And so that allows me to have the most unobstructed conduit to people's brains, you know, is to just put this out on my own.
So the record, Shree 108, your latest, it seems to me that there are some themes of struggle on there and maybe some more pointed comments about economic divide and songs like Money Moves Up. Is that the way you perceive it? Did you want to make it?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, like I, that came from actually watching this couple of lectures of that guy Noam Chomsky, you know, and just kind of trying to, that's where that title came from. And so the concept of, you know, money sort of moving one direction or whatever is what that song comes from and stuff. So yeah, there's like a lot of stuff in there about this, about the struggle of just trying to find dignity as a poor person and trying to find your place on the earth when it seems like there's so much alienation and stuff like that of especially like regular people, you know, like I feel like regular people and just normal working people have really sort of been sort of stripped of their humanity in a certain way. And then they get sold back this kind of fake version, you know, vis-a-vis cable TV or whatever and things. And so I'm like, there's this kind of ongoing character in a lot of my poetry of just a normal person who grew up in, you know, maybe in a semi-rural environment or a rural environment or a small town or whatever, that is coming to these realizations of like sort of the oneness of everything. And then the essence of the illusion, the Maya, the illusion of separateness that is sort of enforced in order to generate profit, you know, and then the whole thing of capitalism, the whole idea of things basically being evaluated in terms of their economic value rather than spiritual value or aesthetic value. So that's kind of some running themes of my entire oeuvre, my entire output. Umberto Eco has this quote where he says, the more open literature is, the more rewarding it is. Like, the more things are nailed down, the less people can sort of participate in the experience, the artistic experience intellectually, which is like, say, if you watch a show like Twilight or something, everything is very nailed down, you know. But, like, art has the ability to sort of be open, you know, and so you can sort of participate in the experience in what I find is to be a richer way. And so, and that's what he was coming to a point too in his some of his writings as well. So that's kind of some things that have kind of guided me, and some sort of rough sort of concepts and things that I sort of work with. I also read Tolstoy had this quote that when people are happy, they're kind of happy in the same way, but when they're suffering or when they're miserable, there's like myriad ways that they struggle. That's kind of an interesting thing to me, you know, that concept there. So a lot of my characters are sort of going through that.
You talked about the banjo and being influenced by artists like Earl Scruggs and John Hartford, and the innovation that Earl Scruggs did with the Earl Scruggs Review. But that was frowned on by so many of his fellows in the contemporary, you know, sort of traditional bluegrass world. Can you talk about his influence on your music?
Oh, gosh. He was my first master in terms of, I learned everything that I could find on him. Every note of every recording of everything that I could find, I learned everything. You know, there's even some mistakes on some of those records, and I learned those as well. You know, I learned there's a place on that Foggy Mountain Jamboree where he's just a little out of tune. You know, I learned all those places. I learned all that stuff, everything I could find on him, you know. And in a lot of ways, I'm just going to throw this out there. Like, you could shoot holes in this all you want to. This is just an idea. But, like, when he brought drums into the world of, like, banjo picking and all that in the late 60s there with the Review, in some ways, that was the last innovation that happened in this music. I think that, like, John Hartford's Steam-Powered Airplane record and then what the Earl Scruggs Review was doing, orchestrally or structurally, when Earl put those drums in there, that was really the last leap forward for the music in a way. It's like, it's strange. The time is beyond ripe for there to be other things brought in that would enriching it, you know, and things like that, and bring it into a contemporary expression that was groundbreaking. I mean, he was able to change music twice. So, you know, once when his own style that he made of playing the banjo, which very few times in history has an instrument been completely redefined. You know, Charlie Parker, Jimi Hendrix, Miles Davis, you know, that guy Cool Herc figured out in hip-hop to put two turntables together with the same copy of the same record on two different turntables where you could cut them back and forth. There's like a list of maybe less than 10 guys who have rebuilt music, you know. It hasn't happened very often. And he's done it twice. That's monumental. It's tough enough to populate a list with people that have done it once, and he's a person that did it twice, so that's pretty amazing, really, you know.
You spent a little bit of time with John Hartford, right?
Yeah, I became friends with him, and he was a real hero of mine and a mentor of mine, and I became sort of long-distance friends. I spent, you know, a few days with him. I have friends that have spent a lot of time with him, but I've really valued, I learned a lot from him and really appreciated his aesthetic, you know.
Well, let's talk about CDs, vinyl, and cassettes. You've talked about how music on CD can be too clean and how having that intermission when you listen to vinyl or cassettes can be a benefit. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I think that one of the things that we lost when we went to make CDs, and I'm sitting in a room with like 300 of them, so I have plenty of them. I'm not, you know, it's a bit hypocritical of me to sort of say things negative about CDs, but the CD was a funny thing aesthetically because it arranged all the music in a linear way where you had all the songs in one line. And the way we had previously been listening to a collected works or an album, so to speak, or a concept or whatever, was with side A and side B. To me, which is analogous to if you go see Death of a Salesman or As You Like It or something, there's intermissions built in to the script in particular places, which give you a chance to sort of stop and go out in the lobby and think about it for a minute, you know. One of the things that they started doing with CDs, because they had a greater capacity linearly than albums, was jamming them where they were really long. My point being is, a lot of times if you go and listen to CDs with somebody or you're with a friend and you say, hey, I got the new so-and-so CD, a lot of times you'll put it on, about two songs will play, maybe three, and you turn it down and start talking. Because they're so long in a linear way, you know. And albums just had that beautiful length, you know, of like a side A. You could just play the side A over and over and over. And that's the way I would listen to records. And I still buy records and listen to records this way. Play side A over and 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 over. Then flip it over. And then go to side B, play side B over and over and over and over, you know. Like, I've gone through periods, and I still do this, where I'll play one album for like a month, you know, and that's really all I listen to, just one side of an album. But I just find that order of information to be helpful. One of the problems, I think, with CDs and with iTunes, so to speak, is there's this sort of black hole of data being arranged in alphabetical order. Like the way iTunes arranges your songs or whatever, it's just all in this big long line, and it's so easy to forget what you have, you know, and it's not the way we think. I mean, that's not the way I think, you know. Like, the way I arrange my records is I kind of have my own way of arranging the information, you know, my record stack. I have things I'm listening to here, things I want to get into over here, things are kind of like old favorites here, and I just have, like, my own way of kind of arranging music in the physical realm. And I think, you know, CDs are arranged to be easy on the computer, but not necessarily beneficial for the listener. And so I think that a lot of the art of sequencing, when you had two beginnings, two middles, and two ends, and an intermission, I think that's, in some ways, is a superior aesthetic than to arrange it all in one long arc, you know. But that could be my frame of reference. I mean, I could be wrong about that because that's just my frame of reference, you know. And tapes are the same way. There's a side A and a side B, you know, so you get to, you know, play that one side. You can play it over and over again. You can get up and flip it. I don't know. I just, I mean, do you know what I mean about listening to CDs? A lot of times you'll put one on, about three songs play, and you turn it down.
I know what you mean, and it reminds me a little bit about how people see live music a lot nowadays, is that they'll be gabbing with each other or looking at their phones half the time.
Exactly. It's exactly that. Yeah, it's exactly that. And I tell you, another thing that is great about putting out 45s and cassettes is you weed almost all those people out. Because to listen to 45s, you have to be sort of a fan of music. You know, I mean, when people, you know, if a guy comes up to me and says, I want two 45s, one for me and one for my friend, that's a music fan, you know. And same thing with cassettes. I like to put out music on tape. And when a guy comes up and says, I want to buy all of your cassettes, you know that guy is a real hardcore music fan, you know. And it's funny, I've had this strange experience with, like, my good friends and the people I've grown up with always have played records and tapes the whole time. So, like, this whole thing of, like, you know, when they sort of say, well, CDs, records are all hat, and there's not going to be any more records, you know. And when was that, like, 95 or so?
Yeah.
94, right in there, early 90s, when they started, you know, putting out commercial music on CDs or whatever, where it became, like, the artifact of that time. And then, you know, now it's all these MP3s, you know, and all this stuff. But, like, it's weird. Like, I've always bought records, you know, and all my friends, all of us have always had turntables and always had cassette decks. It's like, oh, I never got that, you know. And I suppose there's people that sold all their vinyl and went over to then replicated their collection on CD, and now they're going to have to replicate their collection again. They went to MP3. Now they got to do it again if this new Pono thing takes off. You know, they're going to have to replicate their entire collection again. But the people that bought records and cassettes haven't had to really go through that, you know.
When I was growing up, the thing to do would be to tape your LP onto cassette and then listen to the cassette.
Exactly. Yeah, I still do that.
And I went through all of my youth. I was very cassette heavy and still have all of my old mixtapes. That used to be my mode of expression, was making mixtapes.
We must be the same age. I'm 52, and that's exactly how I grew up, was with mixtapes.
Yeah, and I've still got my cassette deck, but I don't have it hooked up to my stereo anymore because all of my cassettes are so worn out. I go back and listen to them, I'm like, oh, man, I don't know. Well, tell us about some of your contemporaries or some artists that you like, maybe that we don't know about.
Oh, gosh, man, are there ever some great stuff. Like, I tell you, a record I've been listening to lately that is really getting me going is that Aphex Twin, his ambient record. He's got this ambient record that came out in the 90s, and I kind of went right by that. And it has ambient in the title. I'm not sure the name of the record, but it's really amazing, and I kind of went right by that and didn't catch it, you know. But I really enjoy this band called Orb. It's like I guess it's like glitch music, but they put out some great music on vinyl and stuff, and then it comes with the MP3 download, so you get this killer vinyl, and then you get the MP3 download, which is really nice, you know. So I've been really getting into that. There's this grindcore band out of Houston called Insect Warfare that I just think those guys are awesome. I'm a kind of a grindcore fan, and Insect Warfare is amazing. They're out of Houston. And then there's this other thing I've been listening to, Lamont Young, who is in some ways like John Cale was playing with Lamont Young when he joined the Velvet Underground. And so it could be said that, in a sense, a lot of the drone sounds kind of came from Lamont Young, and he's been called, like, whatever, the grandfather of drone or whatever. But he's also, like, this heavy kind of just intonation guy, which is different than tempered tuning. Like, most Western music is in what's called tempered tuning, where the tuning is adjusted slightly to make the third sound a little sweeter. But the just intonation, Terry Riley and Lamont Young both were avid devotees of just intonation, and they made some interesting records. And I really enjoy listening to that music, you know. And so those are some things that I've been listening to lately that I like.
So is that tuning like a clavichord versus a piano or something?
Well, the piano has to be tuned into just intonation. Like the just intonation is where the intervals are produced mathematically.
But isn't a clavichord?
The octave is divided into 12 notes that are mathematically proportionate or exact ratio. Because in timbre tuning, the way Western music works is it's tuned slightly sweeter than that, you know, but just intonation sounds like the piano is melting or something. It's really fun to listen to that music. It's really fun to put on around a group of musicians because at first they don't pay attention to it, but then they realize that something is really strange going on with that piano, you know. It's worth looking up. Terry Riley has got several works in that realm, and then Lamont Young, I believe, was like kind of the person that really kind of got a lot of that going in the West, you know, so it's very interesting stuff.
Well, Danny, it's been great to talk with you today.
Okay, yeah, thanks, Joe. Thanks for asking me some good questions and letting me think a little bit.
Yeah, well, everybody check out Danny's website, DannyBarnes.com, for many insightful articles, everything on how to play in somebody else's band on over to his ontological system, A through Z. Danny Barnes is playing Saturday at Moonlight Mile Productions in Arden, North Carolina. And you can find out more at their website, moonlightmileproductions.com. For WNCW, I'm Joe Kendrick.